Good morning, and happy Father's Day to all you fathers out there. I received the greatest Father's Day gift that I could just to be back this morning, and I'm already starting, and I wasn't planning on that. Endless thanks to you for your prayers and support and text and food. Keep the food coming if you want. The food, and all the ways that you were there for our family. We're grateful for that. Unfortunately, Paige was not able to be here this morning, which she's very sad about. She has an early call for a show that she's opening this week, and she's going to be fantastic in it, as she always is, so I'd invite you to come out. Now, the good news about that is that means things are headed in the right direction because we weren't sure if she would get to continue to be in the show that she was preparing for and another show that Anna and Paige were preparing for, which is already opened. And so that is fantastic news. If you're a guest and you're wondering why I got up and within like the second sentence almost lost it, I'll give you and the rest of you, because you've been praying for us and asking about it, and it's easier in some ways to tell you at one time than 100 different times, although ask me and I'll tell you, but a brief update of what happened, and I will do my best to keep it brief for a couple reasons. One, the blow-by-blow version is way too long, and two, you've already seen, and if you haven't seen, a lot of you know me far too well, especially certain parts of it are a little too raw. So there's a chance in which halfway through the telling, I will be on the floor weeping in the fetal position, and no one wants to see that except a couple of you, and you know who you are, because you think it would be awkwardly entertaining, and it would be, but I'm not going to go there. I'm going to do my best to keep things together. It was not last Tuesday, but the Tuesday before, I got a call from Max's preschool, and they said, Mr. Reynolds, we've tried to wake Max up from his nap. I'm going to take a breath. And he's unresponsive. Now, let me tell you, the word unresponsive did not connect with me until that moment. And now, let me warn you that unresponsive is a four-letter word in the Reynolds household. And so, if you ever witness me, and I stub my toe, and then I yell out, unresponsive, just know I'm sorry. God's still working on me. Be gracious towards me. And so, I won't go into all the details of what it's like or what I was thinking as I flew down 6:30 from the church and beat the paramedics to the hospital, or the challenge. He had a seizure that lasted about an hour before finally they pumped enough medication in him to get it stopped. And so I was in there, and lots of things you don't want to see. Things you do want to see are 10 to 15 amazing medical professionals all doing their job in the ER to try to get him where he's stable. And when they realized, okay, his breathing doesn't sound good, and we got to give him more medication to make sure this thing stops, and so it's really not going to sound good unless we go ahead and intubate and have a machine do the breathing for him. And you don't want to hear that, but you're glad he's in a place where they're going to do what they need to do. And all the beeps and all the machines and all the stuff going in him and coming out, and you know, nodes on the head, and it is a terrifying experience. An amazing hospital with amazing people, and it was a rough 24 hours when he was unresponsive. It was a rough next 24 hours when he was an absolute crazy man coming off the medication and out of his mind, didn't know what was going on. It was surreal when they said, okay, we need to test, see if we can figure out if this was caused by some sort of infection. He had a fever by the time the night came. They said the best way for us to test for infection is we need to do a spinal tap. They used a different name for it, and some of our doctors in here, nurses, will remember exactly what it was. But, you know, they say, okay, this is how we need to find out if there is some sort of infection, and we got to draw some of that fluid out. And now, you've got to sign a consent form because every once in a while an infection can follow. And every once in a while, there's a standard procedure, but you just have to know that occasionally this sort of thing can produce paralysis. So sign here and here and, you know, put a date. And I'm like, paralysis, that's fantastic. Where do we sign? That would be wonderful. And then they say, okay, we've ruled that out. So we want to do some genetics testing. We're going to draw some blood, and we need to warn you, all kinds of things can show up in genetics tests that may be connected to this and may have nothing to do with this, including, they said, you need to know that every once in a while, moms and dads find out through the genetic testing that they're actually related. And that was, I got to be honest, I did not see that one coming. So stay tuned on that one. We'll let you know. We don't see the geneticist until September 7th, but I may be introducing Paige as my sister wife when this thing is all said and done. So let me catch you up to where things are today. Max is here, and he is his own same wonderful self, which we weren't sure where things were going to go for a while there. He is now on an anti-seizure medicine that he'll take twice a day for a couple years at least, and maybe just indefinitely. It's a wonderful medicine, and the only potential side effects, they told us, are drowsiness, which we've noticed, and moodiness. Lord, help us with that one if that's a twice a day occurrence. But we'll take it. And we're still trying to figure out what happened, and we may or may not ever figure out what happened. We did learn from the neurologist before he got an MRI that kids with some delays and special needs like Max has are more susceptible to seizures, and we did not know that, so that's good to know. And if you didn't know that about our son, that's good to know. And they also noticed, this shouldn't make me tear up, so let me take my breath. All right. So they noticed on the MRI, which the neurologist has not talked with us since the MRI came out, but there's a few spots on his brain that they noticed that they said are the kind of thing that he would have been born with. These weren't caused by the seizure. They aren't new. He would have been born this way, just the way that he was made. But they could speak to both the delays that he has and the seizures. So we've got a series of follow-up visits with the neurologist to learn more, and that's coming up in about a couple of weeks. Probably the good news is if they think you're in crisis still, then they get you in to see the neurologist sooner, and if they think we're handling this okay with medication, then they work you in when you can. And so we'll spin the positive. We still have to wait a few weeks to see the neurologist to see that as a good thing, and we'll see what transpires from here. And so we are in the process of still learning more and figuring more out. And we're also in the process of figuring out how much to share without oversharing. And so we'll share that with you as we go, but we're trying to figure out how not to overshare as well. Can you believe that was the short version of this story? It can go much longer than this, and I can give that to you if you ask. But I wanted to give you an update, one, because I know you've been praying, and we appreciate that so much, and we welcome your ongoing prayers as we learn more, whether we learn the cause or whether we learn just how to live with kind of the new normal and what that means with someone with seizure disorder and some of the other things. We welcome those prayers. We wanted to let you know because we know you've been walking with us in this, and that's meant so much to us. And believe it or not, and I've been a preacher for long enough, that I decided I would go ahead and also let this serve as a really long introduction into what I want to talk about this morning. And that is, what does faith look like in the face of the many different curveballs that life can throw our way? Because the reality is we still have a lot of questions. And the song we just sung talked about God who takes away our fear. And we're working on that one. It's now gone from the intense fear of a couple of days in ICU to kind of that lull or dull, nagging, just under the surface sort of fear that that's going to continue with us, I think, for a while. But I stand up here with a heart full of thanksgiving and praise that we are as far as we are. When I first got that call and when we went into the ICU, I turned to God in desperation. And when they let us out of the ICU and didn't even step down to another unit, but it was 9:30 at night and they said, "You can go home." And we said, "Fantastic, we'll take it." Then we turned to God in praise. And through some uncertain days and weeks and months ahead as we still try to figure things out, I hope that I'm going to continue to turn to God for guidance. But here's what I also realize. When your child is in ICU, your child is not the only child there. And I realized when I turned to God driving toward the hospital that faith does not guarantee that the outcome will be what we want it to be, which is what makes it so scary, right? And I realize that we exited ICU and words of praise were on our lips, but as best I could tell, every one of those beds was filled. And we don't know where our story will go from here. And you don't always know where those stories will go either. Faith is not a guarantee that the story goes how we want it to go. And faith, as painful as that is not a guarantee that the story ends how we want it to end. And so I actually want to come back to the character of David that Bryce preached on last week. And did Bryce and all of the staff were so wonderful to step up in my absence. And Bryce, you need to know, last week stepped up to fill in very last minute, did a fantastic job. I listened to the sermon on the web, and you can find our sermons on the web. And he did a wonderful job, and a wonderful job last minute, drove the kids up to Searcy, came back, preached, and then went back to Searcy for the camp. And so I'm really grateful for that. And did a great job of retelling the story of David and Goliath, and gave some, I thought, really helpful insights into a familiar story, like about Goliath's potential limitations, including potential eye problems, which is a reminder that the giants in front of us are not always as invincible as we think they might be. Or David's confidence born out of victories that he had when he defeated the lion and the bear while tending sheep, and especially how, unlike the rest of the Israelite army, David was willing to courageously go on ahead and face the giant that was before him, that everyone else stood back and refused to face. That he was willing to move out in faith and confidence that this giant was not invincible, that the things that had come before him had prepared him. And when you read the story, what undergirds that faith for David is ultimately not just the potential weakness in his foe, although it's there, or that he is so confident with his slingshot abilities that he's willing to take on a giant of a man. What undergirds his faith and confidence is that he does not go alone. 1 Samuel 17:45, David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I've got a rock." No, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands and I'll strike you down. And he goes from there. A lot of trash talking that gets more graphic as he goes. And it was a stunning victory to anyone who would have been observing that day. And it is a victory that David attributes to the hand of God. And if you read David's story up to that point, it is a pretty peachy story. David's story is the quintessential obscurity to celebrity, nobody to somebody, underdog story. The youngest of many brothers, this good-looking shepherd lad who is chosen as king by God when another king is already on the throne, because God sees what others don't see. God sees the heart. And this non-soldier shepherd boy standing up and defeating the giant champion of Gath because he had the courage and the confidence and the faith that everyone else lacked. And after the defeat, songs were sung about him. The young ladies made up songs about him. Saul has killed his thousands, David his tens of thousands. In fact, Jeff is going to lead us in that song at the conclusion of the sermon, right? You remember how that one goes? It's a wonderful song. Unless you're Saul, the current king, who happens to still retain the crown. And then it doesn't sound like music to your ears. And David serves Saul. And Saul can't decide if he loves him or if he hates him. To kill him not. To kill him not. I think I'll kill him. And so David goes on the run. And this is where David's story turns from the Hollywood movie beginning to an episode of Behind the Music. Coming up next, trouble behind the scenes in David's life. David lives for a long time on the run. On his own sometimes, sometimes with a band of misfits. Sometimes he's hiding in enemy territory, in Gath. That name ring a bell? I just said it. It's the hometown of Goliath. How desperate do you have to be to go hide there? And he's so desperate that he acts like a crazy man while he's there, drooling all over himself just so they'll leave him alone. And at times, hiding in caves. David is the anointed king, and yet he's king of nothing for a long time. No kingdom, no crown, no throne. Nothing that goes with it. Now, you may not have known it, But the psalm that was read earlier in the service was one of two psalms written while David was in hiding in the cave. And I want to read the other one to you this morning from Psalm 57. I cry aloud to the Lord. I lift up my voice to the Lord for mercy. I pour out my complaint before Him. Before Him I tell my trouble. When my spirit grows faint within me, it is You who know my way. In the path where I walk, men have hidden a snare for me. Look to my right and see, no one is concerned for me. I have no refuge. No one cares for my life. I cry to You, O Lord. I say, You are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Listen to my cry, for I am in desperate need. Rescue me from those who pursue me, for they are too strong for me. Set me free from my prison, that I may praise Your name. Then the righteous will gather about me because of Your goodness to me. Gone is the confident swagger of the giant slayer. And gone is the Hollywood story of the humble, heroic boy's meteoric rise to fame. It's been replaced by life on the lam in a dank, dark cave. A cave filled with despair, and disappointment, and doubt, or in David's words, desperate need. And that's the reality of life. Sometimes life feels far more like a cave of desperation than a field of victory. And there's far more to David's story than we have time for this morning. There are plenty of highs, military victories on David's part, David returning the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem, dancing with abandon and praising God. And there's plenty of lows as well, like the whole fiasco with Bathsheba, in which multiple commandments are broken in one story, until he's finally brought to repentance. And you can read about that, especially the heart behind that in Psalm 51. And connected to that, there is the pleading for the life of his son in prayer, a prayer that is not answered. And there's open rebellion by another son who decides to take the throne from dear old dad. And there's more successes and there's more failures. You can read all about those. And when you take a step back, however, the sum total of the man, the description most of us remember David by, is what? David was a man after God's own heart. David was a man after God's own heart. I don't know about you, but I'm encouraged by that. I like the fact that you can take the full scope of the story of David and still the description is there. David, a man after God's own heart. And I sometimes wonder what makes David a man after God's own heart. Because heaven knows it is not sinlessness. Bathsheba's story isn't the only story of David failing spectacularly. And we know it's not that he always governed flawlessly. And we know it wasn't that David was always without doubt or trouble-free. I read you one psalm. There's other psalms that are far more raw in their struggles with faith and turning to God. David's always honest to God in the midst of the praise, in the midst of the pain. And maybe a helpful reminder on Father's Day is it wasn't because he was the perfect father either. David, like the prophet Samuel at the beginning of 1 Samuel, like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all had noticeable father flaws. And don't get me started on Noah. I'm not touching Noah. And I think it's helpful for us to know, as I look out into this room, and I see a lot of wonderful and committed dads who do the job that they need to do because that's what it means to be a father. And I hope you feel and hear the thanks this morning. But every one of us knows that there are also times of failure. There are flaws. And yet it was not that David was a flawless father that allowed him to be described as a person after the heart of God. Best I can figure what makes David a person after the heart of God is that he is always turning to God. Regardless of the starting point, we know where he's headed. He's always turning to God. When he hoped for rescue, he turned to God. When he needed refuge, he turned to God. When he looked for victory, he turned to God. When he was soundly defeated, he turned to God. When he hoped to save his son, he turned to God. And when that hope was not realized, he turned to God. When he needed to repent, he turned to God. When he just needed to vent, he turned to God. Life is not a kiddie ride. It is an exhilarating, sometimes terrifying roller coaster of amazing highs and screaming, gut-dropping lows. And then a whole lot of flat, dull parts in there too. And sometimes we're moved along by forces beyond our control, and sometimes we are our own worst enemies. And we have to lay in the beds that we make. And yet through it all, God is faithful. And so here's my encouragement. Through life's many twists and turns, if you want a heart like God, whatever comes, no matter what, at all times, keep turning to God. Let's stand and sing.